You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staffer at IndyCornrows.com. And join me on the other line for our now weekly tradition, because we cut back to one podcast a week during the offseason, is Tony East. Tony, how you doing?
I'm good, Adam. I'm honored to be on with a Locked On NBA host legend like yourself.
Yeah, if you didn't catch me, I was on Locked On NBA. I think Thursday was the day.
You were on it. You hosted it. You were the show.
I was there with Locked On Mavs guy. You did a podcast with earlier this summer, actually, Bob McDermott.
Our Doug McDermott connoisseur. He was great.
So that podcast also still very relevant. So go check that out. That's somewhere on our feed. I think it probably happened, 3 weeks ago now?
3 weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah, so check that out. Nick is really good. Has really good insight on the Mavs, and Tony interviewed him to talk about Doug McDermott. So still relevant. So if you want to give us some more listens, go check that podcast out if you haven't yet. But for this week, we're going to we're not talking about Doug McDermott because he's already signed an extension. And we're going to do some extension talk. That's kind of going to be our main topic, and then we'll end with kind of a fun topic we've been doing. We talked about this week, and you'll find that out after we get to it. So it's a little tease for that. You don't know what it is, but it's teased out there. It'll be interesting.
The inspiration for the extension talk, everybody, is that if you look at the Pacers contract sheets, six of their best eight players are going to be free agents the next summer. So possibly extensions could be beneficial for them just to know what they have going into the summer with all the space they might have.
Yeah, and their best eight players will all be free agents the next three seasons.
Yes.
After two seasons.
Yes.
Which is normal in the NBA now because of the short-term deals.
That way after next summer again, though, I don't think.
No, they'll get some guys locked up for longer-term deals. But before we start with the player, I think we should start with the coach, because he's the one who probably will get an extension this summer.
He even threw me for a loop with that. That was good.
I guess I didn't talk about it before the show. But he is the only probably Pacers who will get an extension this summer. Turner's eligible, but probably won't get it because it's probably a prove-it kind of year, and he probably wants to see if he can have a fantastic year and get some bigger returns than they offer him right now. So McMillan, not the average NBA coach, but the going salary for an NBA coach right now is about $5 to $7 million, right?
Yeah.
For kind of a guy, if he hit the market. Do you know any of the details, like Dwayne Casey's contract?
No, I'm not Googling NBA coaching salaries right now.
They're hard to find. I remember a couple years ago, the big thing was a bunch of guys signed for $5 million. Like Kerr signed for $5 million. Derek Fisher signed for $5 million. That was that year. I know Jason Kidd, when he switched teams, made $6 million a year. He's no longer a head coach anymore. But the going rate, I think, for most coaches, I think Vogel signed for $5 million too, or $5.5. It's about $5 to $7 million. If you're not one of the elites, you're not Greg Popovich. Doc Rivers makes $10 as the GM, if you're not coach GM. And McMillan's heading into his last season, which a lot of teams don't like to have their coach as a lame duck for a lot of reasons, because it means the coach is only committed about trying to win this year, and there could be a lot of issues with that and tensions. And it seems like McMillan and Pritchard have a good working relationship, so it seems like they're going to work something out. But the question really will be the amount of years. McMillan, I think, probably only got, this is going to be his fourth season as head coach, right? Or third?
Third.
So he only got 3 years. That's probably because he was an assistant coach and they probably had converted into an NBA contract or NBA contract. And he probably wasn't making that much money to begin with. And it probably was sort of like he had to prove himself because he'd been out of the head coach for so long. He had coached in 2011. He was sort of like, this was kind of his last chance to prove himself. And he's done a decent job. Back-to-back playoff appearances, a really surprising 48-win team last year. The development of Victor Oladipo has been huge. I don't know if you give him credit that or Oladipo, whatever it is. That was huge last year. And he seems to have this team going in the right direction. They've got good chemistry, but a contentious topic for both of us has been, is you don't think he's the head coach that can be the championship head coach, right?
I do not, no. And that makes it hard to extend him because, you know, what is prime Vic? You have 3 more years of Oladipo for sure. Do you want McMillan to be the coach for all of that? Do you gamble on Vic staying for another deal, and then you can work on coaching from there? I mean, you can always fire him, but owners don't like to pay two coaches. So it is a gamble, and I know they know that.
Yeah, and especially if you're going to pay him $6 million a year, you don't want to pay him two or three years of that, you know what I mean? That's a lot of money.
Yes.
On top of having to probably go out and get, if you want an elite head coach, paying $7 to $10 million for head coach.
Yep.
And my only thing is, I understand the value of head coaches and how important they are, but if – is McMillan better than the replacement level head coach? So if you fired him, you have to be able to guarantee to get like a top five coach. So I don't know who those are. I mean, you're not getting Stevens, you're not getting Popovich, you're not, I mean, who's not getting Kerr, you're not getting any of those guys. So your next level is like Budenholzer. You were a big fan of him. I think he did a pretty good job in Atlanta, but is he really that much worse than those guys? And can he get there with the right, I don't know, coaching staff around him? Like, I mean, I think Dan Burke is a really good assistant coach for the Pacers, a great defensive coach. And if the players are so much better, so like Turner, if he just develops into like an all-star all of a sudden, does it really matter who that coach is if you have Oladipo and Turner as your anchors of the team?
Yeah, and so it's hard to find that balance. I mean, we've been having that debate all season, right? Like how much of these guys' development is themselves versus the coach? And obviously, if you credit the coach a ton, and McMillan has proven over the years that I think he is responsible for a lot of it. But, you know, then you get to the on-court stuff where it's like, okay, you know, what is he better at on the court than a lot of other coaches? Like, I like Budenholzer so much because you look at the Hawks. I mean, Budenholzer is good at player development and success. Like, they churn out stud wings every year. It seems like their wings play better than you'd expect them to. And then they had that year when they won 60-whatever games with, you know, their best players being Al Horford and Paul Millsap. Like, that team was incredibly, you know, they overachieved a ton. And last year's Hawks, even, they were terrible, and they somehow won 20-something games. Like, he's good at getting the most out of his guys, and I think that is what a championship coach can do. And Nate gets his guys to improve it. I don't think he gets the most out of them, nor is he the best game manager with player minutes. So I think there is things he can do better that other coaches have that are in the tier above him, even though they're not the superstar coaches. But I am with you that he's better than replacement level, and you can't just get rid of him and just get someone else. You know, that wouldn't work.
Yeah. And also, who is out there that could get next year? So it's not like a Budenholzer's locked in for, let's say, at least three or four years in Milwaukee. I mean, who's going to be the next coach to sort of leave a team? Is it you take a chance on a guy like the guy from the Spurs? I mean, who else is that? I mean, Dwayne Casey, he's probably the same level as McMillan, honestly. They're probably kind of
better.
He's better, but he's not like significantly better where you're like, you're falling over backwards to go sign Casey, right?
Right.
He's not like the huge leap. I'm trying to think who else out there they could get next year. Who's going to get fired next year that could or want to leave his team? There's not a lot of guys out there.
There's a guy I really like who's going to end up being a scapegoat if this team doesn't make the playoffs, and that's Terry Stotts out of the Trailblazers. I feel like if they just don't make the playoffs in the West, they're going to have to make some kind of change, and the coach seems to always be the scapegoat in those scenarios. You just saw it with Casey. So,
well, he is because they're paying those two guys like $50 million combined.
Yeah, exactly.
The best 30 players in the league.
That too. But if you look around other teams, I don't see anyone who's like so obviously on the hot seat or anything like that, that they could be fired next year. That would be an upgrade to me. So I'm with you that I think a contract extension in that mindset makes some sense unless Stotts becomes available, because I really like Terry Stotts. I think he somehow gets those Portland teams to overachieve every year, but that's
just but again, I think you're underrated McMillan where he can get a team to 50 wins. I mean, he's proven that he's about when he's in Portland, he got teams to 50, 48 wins, three of his 6 years there, something like that. I mean, when they were sort of like had the right players, he's done it here, but like he's the kind of coach that gets you the playoffs. I don't think Stotts is kind of the same way where it's the playoffs to get you any further than that.
The key thing you just said is had the right players like that. Like, we always struggle with that balance. Like even Ty Lue, we'd say he's a bad coach, but he had the right players and he won a championship. Like, I feel like Stotts doesn't have the right players and he still gets the Blazers to
whatever. What do you mean? He has Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum.
That's it. That's literally it.
Yeah, but those are two of what? Lillard's a top 15 and McCollum's a top 25?
No, McCollum's not the 25.
No, probably top 30, 35.
Their sixth best player, one of their five best players was like Shabazz Napier, who just got $4 million guaranteed over 2 years.
Yeah, but they've got...
They had Zach Collins in their rotation.
Yeah, but Lillard was playing at an MVP level, and I don't know if that's Stotts or just Lillard.
Lillard's a beast.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't think he has no talent. I mean...
No, I didn't say that, but there's a difference between, like, the Pacers had a good team. They had multiple good players. The Blazers had 2.5.
When you look at the Pacers, they don't – I mean, they've got one star player and nobody else who cracks the top 40, top 50.
But they have a lot more good players than the Blazers.
But isn't that part of their chemistry and that is due to McMillan?
Who knows what another coach could have done. We can't say anything but Stotts has done it year after year. McMillan did it this year. The first year McMillan was the coach, the chemistry was horrible.
Yeah, but that was a player thing, right?
I mean, credit him for it being good 1 year and not blame him for it being bad the other year, you know?
You gave him credit that he was
situation. I mean, obviously, I think Monte Ellis was the problem the year before, but I mean, he can't be like the reason it's harmonious one year and like the other year it was bad. It's like he gets nothing for that. Like you have to look at
it. No, but I think that year he took over a team that was really in disarray because of the Paul George situation. He took over a team that was sort of like, I don't think George wanted Vogel to be fired. I think there were so much other issues that like the fact they make the playoffs even is a testament to him. Like he came in and he was able to get a team that just had like basically no space with a really good player and nobody else and a like a promising rookie and get them to 42 wins is credit, where this year he got to kind of redo that, build from nothing essentially, if you look at the way the team went in the offseason started, and kind of build something. So I don't know if you like say it was that bad of a first season. They made the playoffs without having like really any.
I didn't say he did bad the first season. I said the chemistry was bad the first season.
But I don't think he kind of came mid team. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't like it was his team. This year was the first year where it was his. It felt like it was kind of him in control of the team.
Maybe.
Where like I understand that's due to a kind of coaching over, but that was probably part of it. Was Vogel got fired because they needed to make some big kind of move to get George to stay, was kind of my thought. And McMillan obviously wasn't that, but once they realized McMillan could kind of take over a team by himself, they were like, all right, we'll figure that out. We'll go sign some guys and help you kind of build something else.
Yeah, and they got the perfect team to make it all work. They were really good last year. But I think he deserves no – like you can't give him a bunch of credit for one year and not say the other year when it was terrible, he deserves like nothing.
Yeah, I don't know. I get that first season was just like – I mean, I guess that team was so poorly constructed too, and that's maybe his fault for not getting to work right. But I mean, like we talk about it, Stuckey, Ellis couldn't space the floor. Teague didn't want to be here. George barely wanted to be here. And Turner was like just in his second year, and was why I had no idea what to do.
Yeah, so, it was something.
But let's finish this off. So I think he'll get an extension. So
I'd give him a 2-year extension.
I think he gets 3 probably.
Wow, I don't know. It's rarely hard to find details for coaching contract extensions. I would guess he gets 2 years, because then they could, if they don't like what's happening or they feel like someone's available that could get them to the top, they could get rid of him and move up easier.
Yeah, the problem with giving him 3 years is that you're willing to fire a coach with 1 year left, basically, and that time is right with Victor Oladipo's free agency, and I'm not sure you want to have those the same. But then again, what they could do is they could just restructure his next year, because I think – his big thing is he's probably not making close to $5 million, so maybe they restructured and just say it's 3 years starting now for $15
million. Okay. Like that. Okay, yeah. Yes, I could see that happen.
I think that's his biggest deal for McMillan right now is that he wants to get paid, because he's probably in the low end of NBA coaches. Like I had the, 10th best team last year in the NBA maybe, you know, in terms of record-wise. So he's probably thinking, like, I want to be paid somewhere in that range. Like if Frank Vogel gets paid $5 million to lead a 30-win Orlando team, I deserve $5 million, is probably what he's thinking.
Boo. Not Frank Vogel's fault. Boo.
No, I know. But it's what you'd be thinking if you're looking at your peers and, like, I'm making – let's say he makes, like, $2.5 or $3 million a year. I mean, that's something to laugh at, but that's nothing.
I don't know how coaching negotiations go down.
I mean, because they're part of management, I'm sure he might have an agent, but I don't know.
He does have an agent.
He does, so he probably has an agent talking with Pritchard. But it's probably more – him and Pritchard probably have a pretty good relationship, and it's more going to dinners and talking about it than, like, the agent really, like, facilitating everything. Like a player would.
I don't know how that goes down. I'd have to look into that.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to some of the players, because we spent
players, the fun stuff.
Yeah. So next year you tease it. There's basically six of the Pacers' top 8 players are free agents next season, if you count Tyreek as
3 starters and probably two of their best 3 players off the bench.
Yeah. So 6 of their top 8 guys.
Yep.
Crazy. Like I said. Okay. So I ranked them from priority. We talked about it before the show. Do you want to go with my list or your list or priority? Do you care?
I mean, they're similar enough. So
yeah, we have the first two is the same.
Miles Turner's number 1 for sure.
Yes. So with Turner, he was eligible to sign an extension this summer. Guess is he wants to try to get more than they probably willing to offer him, right?
He is still eligible until the day before the regular season starts to sign an extension.
But my guess is if he can take a leap, he can get into like the $25 million range maybe. But right now he's probably looking at like a $15 to $20 million deal.
You know, I'm writing about this, so I'll snidely put it in there. The Pacers are probably very, very happy that Clint Capella just signed that deal.
I was gonna say that's probably what he's worth right now is around that.
Yeah, well, I think Capella's better, but I think that Turner will have a more open market next year and could get more. or a close to that, especially if he has a good year. So the, and obviously teams have to be wary with these rookie extensions because, you know, it's kind of dumb for them to sign it unless they're getting a steal of a deal because, you know, if the player turns out to be worth the steal of a deal, then it's fine. It's worth the deal. But if you overpay him and then he doesn't improve, then you're stuck overpaying the guy. But if then if he gets way better, then you'll just sign him to a big deal next summer anyway. So they will probably offer him a low ball deal, like I would guess like 5 for $60 to $80. And he probably said no, and he'll try to prove it this year. And then that'll happen. So or that could happen. So I'm guessing that nothing will happen because of the situation Turner is in more than anything.
Right. And Turner's max were 25% of the salary cap next year. So
yeah,
it can be, I believe it's like 27.5 million, a little less, maybe 27 million because it's going to be about 108, 109 million cap. And then with 8% raises, right?
Yeah. And that's another thing is with the cap going up so much, or so much, but
$7 million. $2 million in salary per year, yeah, basically.
Max goes up $2 million in salary. So, you know, if he really balls out this year, he's just earning himself money that he couldn't legally get this summer anyway.
Yeah.
The only difference is, though, if you sign a rookie extension deal, you can get those bonuses. Like if you make all defense, you get a raise and things like that, but you can't get that on a straight like contract you would sign in restricted free agency.
Yeah. My guess would be, though, is the question of whether they let him go get an offer next summer and they match it or they just sign him straight up.
Yeah, it depends. I haven't looked at the center free agency market next summer. I need to do that for the thing I'm writing now. But if it's thin, it's good for him. If it's pretty saturated, like Boogie's in it now too, again, then it's not as good for him. That Boogie thing low key might help the Pacers too. I didn't even think about that. But that's what it comes down to. And like what team's going to be like, oh, we have to throw a bunch of money at Miles Turner. You know, maybe we'll see that, how that shakes out as the season goes along. But like, I've heard stuff about the Knicks being one of those teams maybe. So
but Kristaps is going to be free agent, isn't he?
Yes,
they want him in. That's a good work.
Yeah, that could work pretty well. But there's not a ton of teams too that would be bad in looking for a young center. You know. That,
well, and the thing is, if the Pacers are going to match whatever deal he gets, probably unless he has some offer.
Oh here. Yeah, I totally agree.
So that sort of depresses Marcus. Nobody's going to want to tie up the cap space for 3 days and a guy they know is going back to Indiana.
I think they would tell him that and say, "We're going to leverage your raises into beating any offer the other team has anyway. Please do not match, like sign something we have to match, because then they lose, they can't trade him for a year and stuff like that. Like it just hurts the team, and it's a bad look too. Like, so they need to be clear in his communication. But we should probably discuss what I would give him as an extension, because it's the whole point of this discussion.
Yeah. So I was gonna say,
I said it earlier, I think I would only right now only give him somewhere from 5 for $80 down to 5 for $60, just because I feel like he'll be for sure worth that, and I wouldn't want to overpay him. Overpaying rookie extensions is how you end up in the Wizards, Blazers, Huda, stuck in your current cap hell forever situation. So I think they have to be careful with that. But then if he signs it, great, because I think he's worth that now. And if he doesn't, then next year you'll have a better idea of what he's worth anyway. So
I think he would get Capella's contract today if he wanted it.
I do not. No chance.
I think he would get it just because of his potential. And if you factor in the fact that he was hurt a lot last year for fluke injuries, you can make the case that he's as good as Capella.
I do not agree, but that's fine.
I mean, you factor in the fact that Capella is...
Miles Turner is like barely a top 10 NBA center. That's why you have to be careful.
Yeah, but Capella, you could also make the case, is a huge product of his system. I understand that he might not be.
Yeah, but
his
system. No,
but on the open market, Capella has much less value, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, I don't think so. Because I think you could easily... Like, you get Capella and you immediately run that system and you know he's going to be good.
Yeah, but how many teams can run that system that can afford them? I mean, you're looking, you know what I mean? That's the problem, too.
Any team that has a center like Capella who's that good of a screener and a rim runner and a finisher and a rim protector, yeah, they can figure out that system pretty easily.
I'm pretty surprised that the Kings had offered him a max.
Yeah, they just have a really crowded front court. So I think they didn't. I thought they were going to, though, also.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, I think because of Turner's potential, he'd probably get to Capella. He would get with Capella. Yeah,
the potential is a thing, and maybe at this point, the theory of Turner is better than Turner, but that only hurts the Pacers because it makes his value seem higher league-wide than it might actually be. But that, you know, it is what it is. And I think he could probably get around Capella's value next summer. So I'm assuming he'll just wait. But
yeah. I think ultimately, though, he'll probably have an improved year and get close to $100 million.
I would hope that is the case also.
If he somehow gets the max because he has an awesome year, that is a good thing, but also worries me because
if he becomes worth the max, then great, pay him the max. That means he had a great year.
Yeah, but if he has one great year, that's a lot to pay for a guy for one great year, and then you're locked into him. And Oladipo. Plus, we should talk about how that Turner's cap next summer is so low that it helps them get another free agent if they want.
Yeah, that is huge. That's something I was going to talk about with future players is guys who have a cap hold below what their contract is likely to be is really important for team building. And Turner being such an important guy, because he's obviously they're going to try to keep him, his cap hold being below what he'll likely get is so important. So they have to use that for both timing and team building next summer.
All right, we gotta go a little faster through these because we were taking like 10 minutes each guy. Let's so do
we
number.
Did a lot. We did the most important two. So
yeah, okay. Let's do number two really quick. We both have it the same. It's Corey Joseph, right?
Yes. We both like Corey Joseph because of his age and his fit with the rest of the roster. Mm-hmm. And I think that he's probably about an MLE player on the open market, right? So they could leverage his bird rights into something like that. But dang it, Adam, you just ruined my segue. He's one of the guys in the opposite situation where his cap is probably more than his salary will be. I don't think he'll ever become worth $15 million next year. So they'd want to get his deal over first if they want to extend him just so they could keep him around. And they can give him an extension too, like Josh Richardson got last year. It was 4 for 42 or close to that average annual value every year, like $10 million a year, which wouldn't be horrible for him, honestly. But, you know, maybe 4 for 40 or 4 for 35 would be better. But next summer is probably what he'll look for too, just because there'll be more money and he could try to pull some MLE.
Yeah, I was thinking for him 3 years between 30 and 35, because he's probably your stopgap if you believe in Aaron Holiday.
Yes, that is true. And they obviously believe in Aaron Holiday because they drafted him.
And he's perfect. If Aaron Holiday becomes a starting point guard, he can be your backup then last year of his contract.
Yeah, which would be huge. Yeah. But yeah, his cap hold next summer is over $15 million and he's not. And I mean, it's like Turner. If he becomes worth $15 million, great, then you pay him that. But I don't expect that will happen.
Yeah, he needs to get a 3-point percentage into the 38 range to be worth that even. So
yeah.
Big thing for him. All right, so the next two guys we have, I'm going to just do them together because they're guys the Pacers will bring back if they can't get a big free agent, and that's Thad Young and Bojan.
Yeah, or Tyreek instead of Bojan. And
well, Tyreek will do later. Well, after this one, because Tyreek's a little different case.
We just haven't seen him with the team yet, so it's hard to say. I'm with you there. Yeah, Thad is just super underrated. But another cap hold higher than what he's probably worth situation. Let me phrephrase that. Definitely.
100%. He's been at what, 15 or 18 million dollar cap hold?
20. 20.6. Yeah, huge.
Yeah, not worth that.
No, not at all. But I can't, I don't know. I feel like they're going to let him go just because of the way this whole summer shook out. I'd give him a 2-year extension if I could, though. I really think he'd be worth keeping around.
Yeah, I also wonder.
22-ish.
Yeah, I was thinking about 2 years for 20. But I wonder if they strike out everywhere else and they decide, hey, Thad, we'll give you the rest of our cap or a huge cap for 1 year.
Yeah.
Just to get him to stick. Because, like, I think they ultimately want to upgrade the power forward position and maybe Sabonis supplants him in the season and it doesn't matter then. But if that doesn't happen, then they're not a ton of great power forwards out there. And I think they could kind of say, let's just push our cap space a year and try to get somebody else next year.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. And I think they're going to try something like that. And cap holds are going to be super fascinating on how they manage those. Because they won't cut them until they absolutely know they get somebody. So what's the value of the bird rights of a guy, stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. And then Bojan's the same way. If they go for Jimmy Butler and get Jimmy Butler, Bojan's gone. But if not, Bojan's probably back on a similar deal with Thad. Maybe 3 years, maybe three. Because he's a little younger. He's like 29. He'll be 29 next summer. But or 30 next summer, sorry. So maybe 3 years, 30, the same contract he basically has now, but a couple more years added on.
Yeah, and the wing is so important, and Bojan's better than people realize. I'd probably give him a 2-year deal, you know, give him through Vic's deal, see how that goes. And he could even be a good bench player, so it's not a huge deal to tie him up. And I'd say about the value he has now is fine. Like, why would you give him more than $10 million?
The question, well, that'd be if somebody else goes out and offers him more.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's what you have to worry about with both Thad and Bojan, if somebody goes out and offers him 3 years, 45, or 2 years, 30, something like that. Something so a little outrageous, but maybe shorter years because they can push their cap space.
And both Bojan and DC have cap holds right around $13 million. So it'll be interesting to see what shakes out for them. They're probably both worth a little less than that, maybe more obviously in Bojan's case, but we'll see. Even though DC is underrated also.
Yeah, so then the fifth guy on this list, you teased him earlier, is Tyreke Evans. He'll be 29 after next season. His contract just depends on what he looks like. If he plays 75 games, is healthy, is the number two he's claiming to be off the bench and can help Oladipo all the time, he'll get a nice extension. If he's somewhere in between that. He might get an extension. If he's not that, he's not coming back.
Yeah, and they can't give him the same extensions because they only have his non-bird rights.
But he's not going to get more than 15 on the market no matter what season.
No, he has like Apple's under 15 mil, so it's not crazy to keep that one around.
Yeah, and the thing about him is just because he's coming off the bench, he's not going to put up like 30 a game like that. It could get him, you know what I mean? He might not want to get close to 20 a game because coming off the bench. He might get 15 a game at his best. But no way he gets more than his cap holds. You can offer him 2 or 3 years to that, and you can offer him the idea that he's playing with Oladipo and the chemistry, and things work out really well. That could probably be enough of a motivating factor.
He could be a good candidate for our favorite guy, the two guard who plays next to Vic when Vic's starting at the one eventually.
Yeah, or I mean, he also, if they really decide they want to get rid of Corey Joseph and Darren Collison, he could be kind of that point guard.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he played a lot of positions last year. I think he's more important than Bojan to me personally, just because I feel like that positional versatility allows you to sign other guys more frequently. Like, I feel like Bojan's locked in at the wings. So you have to get either a guard or a forward if you keep him. But with Tyreek, you know, you're set on getting the next forward for your team if you get him.
So I feel like with Bojan, though, you can play Bojan anywhere from 2 to 4 if you really want to.
Yeah, maybe. I feel like guards would cook him a little at the 2, but he could start and play the 4 last year fine.
Yeah, but if you can sell that, Vic will guard the best guard on the team, and then you put Bojan on the other one, I guess.
Well, and the other thing about Bojan that makes extending him hard is, like, say McDermott just works out perfectly. Like, there's no point.
Yeah, then,
you know.
Yeah. You bring back Bojan for the asset, and you trade him.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing about this. You don't want to lose a guy for nothing, but if you have cap space, you can get something else. Maybe you find something else, other spot you need to upgrade on or something like that.
Right. The only guys I would actually, like, offer extensions to, though, if we're being completely honest, are Miles and Corey Joseph.
Yeah, no, I think the rest of these guys are just all up in the air. Our last guy is Darren Collison, and this is we were talking before the show, where I think he's probably not back. Let's take some really cheap deal to save the Pacers.
Yeah, I think he might be the most tradable guy on the team this season, too. They got Tyreek. Corey can start in a pinch, and a team that needs 3-point shooting or something or needs a point guard might just want him. So we'll see, but I don't think they'd give him an extension. There's just no point, and he's pretty easily replaceable in free agency.
Yeah, it would be for chemistry. He's a good locker room guy, and I think he's a perfect candidate for next season to have like the full mid-level for 1 year for some team, just because he's like, he'll be 31 years old, so you don't really want to extend him more than 2 years, and he probably is a perfect guy to come off a bench on a playoff team. You know, something that's right there in the championship race.
That would be nice. He'd be a good sixth man on a good team.
Yeah, I mean, he was that way the Clippers a few years ago.
Uh-huh.
And he has experience. He can come in and be your starter, and you're not completely screwed. Kind of thing if a guy gets hurt, whatever it is.
Yep.
He's a nice guy to have off your bench. All right, so then let's move forward one more year, and that will be when Sabonis is a free agent.
Kyle O'Quinn is not getting an extension.
He's not. Maybe he comes back for $3 or $4 million if he wants to for another year. So Sabonis will be a free agent, and his contract obviously depends on his next two seasons. I mean, today he's probably worth maybe $50 to $60 million over 4 years, right?
Yeah, maybe $15 million a year guy, probably a little less than that.
Yeah, 15 is a little high for him.
I would say 4 for $50 is about as high as I would have gone.
I was thinking the Nurkic contract right now is probably what he's worth.
Good comp.
He got 4 for $48 million. He might be a little better than that. I mean, but not much.
His cap hold will be $10.5 million. Really close to Turner's. They were picked about the same level. So he is close to that, like on a first year basis, you know, like with the raises, that's how it would get up to $50 million. So
yeah.
That's close. So we'll see how much he improves, but he'll be interesting, especially if they extend Turner. That makes him even more interesting.
Well, if they extend Turner, he's probably the tradable piece.
Oh yeah. Oh,
but if he really becomes the power forward for the team and you like him at your starting power forward, he's worth whatever that ultimately becomes. And if he becomes, I don't know, a borderline all-star, maybe. I don't know if he can really maybe reach that level. I don't know. I don't really know if he can be a borderline all-star if he's that power forward. I think at center he has a chance to do that, but I'm not sure at power forward spot. I don't know if I trust him there. But if somewhere at that level, he could be kind of like we talked about it, that their three pieces could be Sabonis, Turner, and Oladipo for the future if he becomes something. So, and it is all just depending on what happens with his career the next 2 years.
Yeah, it's hard to say what he would get. And especially if he remains as a backup, but you know, like we didn't really say this with the Thad extension. We talked about it before the show. If Domas steps in at the 4 and Thad's replaceable, he's definitely not getting extended and he's gone. But that could make Domas more likely to get an extension if he fits with Turner and could play the 4.
Yeah, I mean, if he can fit Turner and play the 4, I mean, this team's ceiling just kind of just jumps like on the levels, basically. right?
Yeah.
Sabonis can legit, or if Sabonis plays center and Turner plays the four on offense and like that, this whole team's outlook for the future becomes significantly higher.
Oh, absolutely. That would be huge.
Because you got two guys under 25 plus a 27-year-old at the time, which all you'll be. So.
And heck of space. Yeah. The other guy, do I even want to do this, Adam?
Well, I have him on the last guy, and you're talking about in another year from now or 2 years from now?
Is it the guy that drafted 18th last year?
Oh, no, I was not going to talk about TJ Leaf at all.
Okay.
You just don't know. If he has a terrible year, he might not even be back next year.
Wait, who is your other guy then?
Well, in 2 years from now, Oladipo's a free agent.
Oh, my God, he'll get the max. Done. That's it.
Well, I was going to say, I was going to be real fast. 5 years, $200 million, right? That's the way you get 30%.
It's over. Right? The 30% max, because it'll be 8 years. Yeah, that's it.
Done. With 8% rated. So if it's $120 million salary cap, it's like 36 a year, I think, right? Yeah. And then you add 8%, you get to like somewhere in the mid-40s the last year. So
nuts. But he'll deserve it at that point.
It takes him from 28 to 33, which is worrisome at the end of it, but there's 28, 29, 30 years you're fine with.
It's going to be funny when his $31.5 million cap hold is less than the salary he's going to get.
Well, no, his first year will be 36.
No, exactly. That's a good thing. His cap hold being $31
million. Oh, gotcha. Well, yeah. Then they'll tell him to wait until they can maybe sign a guy. Because they'll own his bird rights too, right? Because he'll trade it for him in 3 years of the team.
And because he got traded after his rookie contract, he's not Supermax eligible, which, I mean, it sucks for him, but it's big for the Pacers. It saves them 5% of the salary cap if he ever makes another All-NBA or something.
Yeah, which hopefully he will, to be worth $200 million.
I know, right?
And honestly, I think
he already made All-NBA and All-Defense, so he would, like, I mean, you have to be 7 years to be eligible, so he wouldn't have been anyway, but, like, he has started the pedigree already.
Yeah, and honestly, though, he'll be fine with $200 million, I think.
Oh, yeah, my God. And McDermott's the same summer. Who has any idea about that? Who knows?
Yeah, the one question Oladipo would be whether he takes, like, a 2-1 to go back in when he's 10 years.
Yeah,
that would. And then try to get the 35 max.
Yeah, but they can do a max extension for him in 2021, maybe, you know?
Yeah. Remember
when Harden got that extension before he got the Supermax? Like that kind of thing.
Yeah, but then with Oladipo, too, is one, he'll have the benefit of he's actually making a lot of money currently. Like, he's not underpaid.
Yeah.
For a guy who really became a star now, he's actually maybe not paid fairly, but he's paid well. Like, he's making $20 million a year. Like, that's nothing to laugh at. I mean, unless that, like, the $28 million that Lillard makes, but he's up there. So he has the benefit where he could take a risk of going 2-for-1 because he knows he has a lot of money banked away. Or he could just say, I'm making a ton of money. I don't care. I don't need the $250 million. I can take $200 million.
Yeah, that'll be up for him. That summer will be interesting. That'll we'll forever remember 2021-22 is the Oladipo McDermott Leaf summer, right?
Yeah, so Leaf. So McDermott, we don't need to talk about because, again, we have to see his fit. And Leaf, I don't know if he's going to be here at past another year.
Yeah, I mean, they're probably going to pick up his third-year team option, but that fourth-year option is currently up in the air.
What's his third-year option for?
Third-year option's for $2.8 million, and they have to decide by October 31st.
Oh, man. They'll do it because that's so cheap.
They'll do it.
That's so cheap.
Yeah.
And that's
a lot of guys get their fourth-year decline, though, like Kazonia and
– Did Solomon Hill get his fourth-year decline?
What?
Solomon Hill get his fourth year declined.
Yeah, Solomon Hill got his fourth year declined. Yeah, stuff like that happened. Third year's like very, very rarely. Wade Baldwin, Papianis is the only two I can think of. But
did Malachi Richardson get his third year waived? He might have.
No, he got his third year. He didn't get his fourth year.
Okay, that's what it was. I'm trying to remember.
So the Raptors have one more year of him.
It's because all these guys now are on the rookie scale, and so they're so cheap with the old rookie scale with the cap spike. So it's like 2% of the salary cap. So even if you decide to get rid of him, you're not completely damaging him. I mean, they pay 2% of the salary cap to Monta Ellis right now, so it's not like the end of the world.
Deciding to get rid of him means that, like, you just – it's over. You give up. He's not going
to
be good.
Yeah, and it's hard to admit that when you're a GM.
Oh, it's so hard. Yeah, and that it's so rare. Like, there's almost just no point because even the guys like Noah Vonleh, who didn't prove a ton, like, they just got – he just got another deal for his fifth year. Like, people believe in these guys even after their first team just because of fit and stuff, so – he'll probably get all 4 years, but who knows?
Yeah, we should also say with Leaf, if he somehow becomes a decent player, there's also the chance that bumps that out. If Sabonis has a decent year,
or something like that.
Or maybe, because then Sabonis maybe becomes a stopgap year, and then you trade him to let Leaf be the starter. I don't know, but there's also that chance.
There's so many reasons I feel like Thad doesn't get extended, and TJ Leaf is not even on that list. So
yeah, well, Thad's, I mean, you talked about it. It's the contentious June that he had with the front office.
Yeah, like that could not have been.
Yeah, I don't know if that does well with the relationship, but. Anybody else on the salaries that we're missing? I mean, there's rookies.
No, too early to talk about anybody else. I mean, EK is not getting an extension. Holiday, we haven't seen. McDermott, we haven't seen. And that's it.
Elise Johnson, we haven't seen. Alizé, sorry.
Alize, we did it again. We need to do this.
I did it again, and I'm gonna.
I respect the guy who said we need to do an Alize swear jar, and every time we say it wrong, we put money in it.
Okay, when I have more money, someday I'll do that. All right, let's do a quick break, and then on the other side, we'll do our special preview. All right, welcome back in. So to end today's podcast, Tony and I are going to do a discussion that kind of was sparked by me. Just honestly, I was doing a top five pacer center of all time thing for Indy Cornrows because it's off season and I'm bored and we're hip and retired. So, and when I started looking at it, I got to Rick Smith's and I was kind of deciding where he ranked. And I started looking at it and he was basically the pacer center for 12 years and 10. He was from 1999 to 2000. Basically, he was the starting center and the team I thought may have had their most dominant decade until this decade. And so I just wanted to do a brief just discussion of what's the best Pacers decade. Do they have a chance of this being the best decade in franchise history? And then we talk about the best 10-year run. It's not just a decade. So decade would be 90 to 2000, 2010, 10 to 20, so on, going backwards.
Yeah, we're not counting the NBA. That's the ground rule you have to set is it's like 90s is the decade. You can't pick like 1994 to 2003 because that's probably the best 10-year run. But that's
yeah. So let's get that one out of the way. From 93-94 to 03-04, they made six conference finals, one NBA finals. Yep. They had six seasons of win percentage above 600. The only reason I say that's because the one lockout year they won 33 games, which is on pace to win I think somewhere in the mid 50s. But there's only 50 games. That's why they won so little.
Yep.
I mean, that was the best day. That was the Reggie Miller.
Mary Brown's first year through Rick Carlisle's first year is the best decade.
Yeah, I mean, they had the best team of their franchise history in that run somewhere. You could count the final team as the best team or that team in 03-04. So that was the best 10-year stretch for the Pacers franchise. But so from 90 to 2000, they made five conference finals and one NBA finals, missed the playoffs once, and made the loss in the first round five times.
Yeah, they were... Yeah, go ahead. Keep
going. No, go ahead. You're good.
Yeah, I think too, we're going to get some old heads coming in and saying, obviously the 90s on this one. And I get that. But I think some of it too is that the 90s might be more memorable or more of like a connection to that team because it was like the same guys every year. You know, you had Reggie every year, you had Smits every year. It just probably felt more memorable and like connected to the team. Whereas this time, you know, in 2010, you started off with the Grange years and the PG years. And then now you're the Vic years. Like, obviously, it's been a huge success of a decade, but you know, it's just been like a different team that's been successful every time. So maybe memorable wise, the 90s are better, but this is like a competing decade in terms of success.
Yeah, and so for this decade, 2010 to we'll be finished in 2020, they've made two conference finals. They made the playoffs every year, but one year, basically the PG year.
Yeah, the PG injury year is really holding back this decade from even more. And they almost made it. They almost made it without him. That year would have been insane if they had.
Yeah, and there are some parallels, too, between this decade and the 90s, that the fact that Jordan, LeBron basically stopped this team from making the finals more than one time.
They got into the finals when Jordan was a Wizard.
Yeah, I mean, that's in 98. They could have made the finals. They should have. They went to seven against Jordan. They could have made the finals again, I would say, in 13 probably against LeBron. And maybe this year, if they had beaten LeBron in the first round, they could have made a run at the finals because of with all the injuries to the Celtics, who knows?
Pardon me, Adam, the best decade was obviously when they were in the ABA.
I was trying to say at the beginning that I'm not counting the ABA again because best NBA decade. Their ABA years were awesome. I mean, like
they went to four finals in 5 years. Yeah.
There's all these things like it was a diluted league, right? Wasn't the ABA like maybe, what was it, 14 teams, I think? I don't remember how many teams were in the ABA. I'm going to look it up real quick. But the ABA, I mean, that's the thing about anything before basically the Bird and Magic era is there weren't a lot of teams in both leagues, so it kind of made it easier to make finals runs. You know, if you had one dominant player, they had Mel Daniels, they were so much better. You know, from like 80 basically till now, you have to have two or three good players to even compete.
So,
I mean, that's been the thing with the Pacers is that they managed really to create four teams where they were able to compete for championships. The Reggie Miller, Rick Smits team, maybe you had Jalen Rose in that too, that kind of three-headed monster. Then you got like the Jermaine O'Neal, Artest team, and then you got the PG Hibbert team. Now you got the Oladipo Turner team, but that team hasn't competed for a championship yet.
Exactly. And so the thing is just what you define as success. I would probably say the 90s were a better run just because they had more playoff success, but I think this team right now has more like overall winning, so it's hard to really say. Like that 39-43 Larry Brown year and 96-97 was a rough patch. Someone was injured that year. I can't remember who it was, but you know, that one kind of holds down the 90s a little bit. So it's tough to say.
Yeah, that's the year that Jalen Rose and Brown tried to kick him out of the league, basically.
Yeah.
And that holds him down because the
Pacers, Mark Jackson was only here for part of the year.
Yeah, and the reason that holds him down is because the 14-15 year, it's pretty reasonable. Like, the fact that they won 38 games without Paul George is, like, awesome. I mean, like, it was a success. They almost made the playoffs that year without their best player. Where, like, 96-97, I don't know, it was hurt, but it seems more like it was a negative to the decade versus, like, I don't think 14-15 is a negative to the team.
Yes, and Indiana legend LaSalle Thompson was on the 96-97 team, so that's still cool.
Yeah, and this decade they won, so they tied the 99-2000 team for the most wins of the decade.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
So in 99-2000, they won 56 games. They won
games. Oh, like individual.
Individual season. Sorry, I didn't phrase that right.
No, they won 61 one year.
Yeah, but that was not between the two decades.
Oh, sorry, that's 2000s.
Yeah, I mean, that was the best. I think that's still the best team of 3-14. But yeah, so then they got 2 years left. They probably have to make two straight conference finals, right? And maybe an NBA finals and win 50 games each year to be about even with the 90s team.
Yep, I agree.
Which they could do. They could make two conference finals, I think.
1920, probably their best chance to be the finals team.
Yeah, I mean, if Turner's bonus becomes something and the Warriors get broken up or injuries and you're looking at LeBron at 36 years old and maybe Kyrie leaves the Celtics, you're looking at an opening maybe.
Yeah, and they snag some good free agent. Yeah.
I mean, if they're able to snag Butler next summer and put that with Turner and Oladipo, that team could win a championship possibly.
They probably won't get Jimmy Butler, but that would be awesome.
No, but if they made a conference finals this year, that also could probably help them.
Yes.
Case for Jimmy Butler, too.
Yes. Winning in the first round this year is unbelievably important.
I think also winning 50 to 55 games, getting a top three seed, is super important, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because what could happen is going to be Boston, Toronto 1-2, but let's say, I mean, Toronto, maybe their playoff success blows up in their face or something like that, and then you don't have to play. That way you don't have to play, and Philly be number four, I'd say those are the top four teams. Well, you don't have to play one of those teams twice, like two of those teams basically in the first round.
Yeah.
First two rounds. You can win a first round series and then maybe get lucky with injuries or maybe something like that, and you can win a second round series to the conference finals.
Exactly. I agree. It's going to be interesting to see how it shakes out.
Maybe. I mean, there's an off chance they could go for like 55 to 60 wins. There's like, there's a world that happens.
Probably more likely in 1920, but I agree.
Yeah. I mean, you remember the East is really bad this year. They're going to feast on the bottom of the East.
Yeah.
And if Oladipo makes that, what does his trainer said? It'd be a mini LeBron out there.
Yeah, we got that tweet up on 8.9 seconds.
Yeah. Did you see the video of Oladipo going 1-on-1 against you? You tweeted out on 8.9, I think. Against Durant, but then his smile after he made the shot where he was
they were climbing on each other.
Well, he was trying to cover it up.
My favorite video from Vic at USA Camp is when he drives and Pop just decks him at the basket.
Oh, I didn't see that video.
It's like Pop playing wing defense and all these dudes, and then all just like crossing up and skating right by him while he like bumps him, and then Vic comes in and he like shoves him and makes him miss, and they're hitting each other at the end. It's pretty funny.
I said, it's been. Do you think he makes the roster for the Olympic team in 2020?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, I'm thinking he.
I don't think Turner does, but it is really cool that he's at the mini camp.
Well, if you think like you said, Turner's in the top 10 center, but first of all, among America centers, he might be in the top 10.
That's true. Gobert's off the list if you do just American. Who else?
Is Capella American? I'm trying to remember. Capella
Swiss. He's off the list.
Right. Those are the two, right? That put him probably in the top.
That's 10. That's the only two I can think of very quickly that are foreign for sure.
I think Towns play for the Dominican too.
He might.
I think Towns plays for the Dominican team. I think Coach Towns plays for that team. So yeah.
I need a list of all the centers in the NBA so I can go through their nationality.
But, I mean, Turner's been in the USA select camp for two years ago, wasn't he? After the second
that's good for him, too. That's great for the Pacers. This is good for the Pacers in recruiting to have those guys there.
Yeah, and one thing I did notice, too, is Turner had a video with Paul George, and he's carrying in that gallon of water. Remember, there was some reference that he was starting to, like, do that now because part of his workout routine or whatever.
Funny.
Yeah, so it's good to see the two Pacers there, at least.
Shout out to Josiah over at Steady Losing for the tweet. Someone said Carmelo Anthony has showed up at Team USA camp, and he said to play basketball.
That's funny. I say, and I mean, I assume Sabonis and Bowen are gonna be playing for their national.
Sabonis has been playing for Lithuania all summer.
Oh, he has or isn't
on Getty. Yeah, I don't know what the games have been. I need to look into that. I should probably write about it. Okay. But yeah, he's been playing for Lithuania this summer.
I think Bojan is playing for his nationality team too.
Yeah, Croatia. Yeah.
Is Joseph too from a
Joseph's Canadian. He was playing for their USA qualified team. Yeah.
He's yeah. So a lot of Pacers are in the international. I just hope they move the stanchions back in LA or Las Vegas, not LA, Las Vegas.
That'd be cool.
I mean, did you not, I got a little bit deja vu when I was watching, I don't know, some of the practices. I was watching like Paul George go up kind of, and I'm like, oh crap, that's what happened last time.
I saw a video of the Paul George or a picture of the Paul George leg on my timeline. I was like, come on, man.
Yeah. Dark days, dark days.
Dark days. Oh, can we give a shout out to end this episode?
Yeah, let's do it.
Alex Poitras getting another contract in Atlanta. Congrats. That's awesome.
Good for him. That's good. He had a decent summer league, right?
That's a great landing spot for him too. Like I said earlier, they turn out those wings, man. Like that could be great for him.
Plus, he'll get a lot of chance to play because the team's not very good.
He learned from Vince Carter. What a guy to learn from. That'll be cool.
Atlanta team's going to be so bad.
Congrats to him. I'm clapping on my desk. And that might help Ben Moore's chances of getting at 2A contracts again.
Yeah, or the guy they signed.
Elijah. Elijah Stewart. Yep. It doesn't really matter too much for the roster, but I am happy for him. That's
great. Yeah, you got anything you're writing this week?
Yeah, right now I'm doing that thing on the Turner versus Capella contract stuff. And then we're doing our love-hate series on all the players still. I think Thaddeus Young comes out today, so read that if you didn't.
Where at? What's that?
Sorry. And then I love doing the bottom of the barrel guys, so I'll probably do EK Anigbogu this week for that.
All right. And then do we have any idea what we're talking about next week, or are we just going to play it again on Sunday morning?
Yeah, we just figure out topics throughout the week.
I just keep a list, and we did our whole list for this week. So
people have tweeted at us and said that they want us to do the fan thing where we just have you guys on to talk and learn about each other.
Could be interesting. So here's what I think we could do. We could have them leave with a voicemail and then keep the recorded voicemail as like a question.
Well, I think it could be cool to have like we could do two shows a week and have the Wednesday show just be like 10 minutes where a fan comes on and talks about themselves and then talks about one topic about the team. I don't know. Who knows?
All right. Well, we'll discuss this after the show.
It's unlikely, but it's possible. And then someone else said, try to have a real player on. And let me tell you, we have tried and I would love to, but it is very challenging.
Yeah. Especially in this office because none of them are really in Indiana.
Yeah. They're on vacation. It's August. This is their time off.
Yeah, if I was an NBA player and made the kind of money they make, I would be in, like, the Bahamas right now or L.A. yeah. or Hawaii or somewhere where I could, like, train but also just, like, sit at a beach every day.
Yeah, just, exactly.
Whatever. Or go to my nice million-dollar mansion on the coast of Los Angeles.
But that's all I got. Now I'm out. Now I'm done.
Yeah, that's all I got, too. As always, you can follow our podcast at Locked On Pacers. You can follow Tony at Teast NBA, me at Freeman Adam 5. Like Tony, we were previewing before the show, I was on Locked On NBA last Thursday with Nick from he's from Maz Moneyball and Locked On Maz. I'm not going to ask his last name because I can't do it justice. but Tony did a podcast with him on Doug McDermott that if you have a listen to check out, it actually was really good. Previewed Doug McDermott, who it's still relevant now. Offseason, anything is relevant from the offseason or offseason content. We'll be back again next Monday. That's all you got is Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, have a great rest of your day.